From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall, and COVID is once again on our mind. COVID-19, we've been talking about it for a year and a half, more than that now, and now the Delta variant of COVID-19, which obviously we've all heard about for weeks now, is behind a big surge in cases that has not left our area unaffected. We've got a panel of guests to talk about that. A couple of local health departments are represented and healthcare providers as well. And so we're talking to Melanie Taji today from Winona County Public Health Department. She's a supervisor of that department. Melanie, thanks for joining us on Newsmakers.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Also joining us, Carrie Bloom, who's the vice president of Vernon Memorial Healthcare in Viroqua. Carrie, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Let's see. Paula Silla is the health education manager at the La Crosse County Health Department. Paula, thanks for being on Newsmakers.
Very pleased to be here. Thank you.
And Dr. Joseph Podoruka, who is involved in intensive care and pediatric and adolescent medicine at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. He's been a guest on this show before. Dr. Podoruka, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Happy to be back and looking forward to educating the community and public ahead.
So we're talking about COVID-19, and in the news is this Delta variant that has really caused quite a spike in something that we thought was on the decline and unfortunately is not. Let's start with Paula Silla from the La Crosse County Health Department. Paula, when you're talking about the Delta variant making its way into our city, or whether you're talking about just COVID-19, sort of the original version, I suppose, cases are on the rise again. What does it look like right now in La Crosse County?
La Crosse County has seen an increase in the number of reported cases. I was just looking at some data that we shared today at a meeting with our healthcare providers. In comparison to a week in July where we had single digit number of cases per day, we now have cases up, 19 to 189 cases per week. So we've seen 164% increase in the past 4 weeks of cases. We are assuming that these cases are Delta variant. Not many are sequenced any longer, but that's what we're seeing in our community. It would be similar to what has been seen across the rest of Wisconsin, and I would say the United States as well. And so we're seeing more cases again. And I guess the only other comment I would make, and Dr. Podoruka can verify this as well, is, diseases that are caused by viruses do what they do to make the most transmissible or effective version of themselves. And so this version of the Delta variant is very effective in transmitting from person to person.
And in terms of, you talked about not sequencing anymore, that is a reference to how you would know specifically whether it's the Delta variant that you're looking at. How is it just an assumption now that most of the people getting it are getting the Delta variant, or how do you know? Or is there a way to know?
Some cases were sequenced, and in locally, I think at one of our medical centers, Gunderson Health System, and then the State Lab of Hygiene in Wisconsin has sequenced cases in certain situations, or in people who maybe were vaccinated, they sequenced the virus to see if it was a different variant. That's done at a statewide level now. Every once in a while, we can request a case to have a virus sample sequenced. But yeah, that's what they do, is they look at it to tell if it's the original or if it is a new version.
We've got a geographically diverse panel here. Let's cross the river into Minnesota, Winona County, Minnesota, which is part of our listening area, right across the river from Trempealeau there. Melanie Taji from Winona Public Health, what's going on there in Winona County?
Yeah, so we're seeing something very similar to what's occurring over in La Crosse County. And like Paula mentioned, there's an increasing trend across the state, across the country, and across the Midwest. So what we're specifically seeing here in Winona County is, again, mirrors exactly what's going on in La Crosse County. It's earlier on in July, we were averaging about one case per day, if that. fast forward us to the end of July, we're averaging 4 cases. Fast forward to this week, we're averaging about 23 cases per day. Typically in public health, we look at, well, was there any social event that could possibly cause an uptick in cases 2 weeks after the fact? Because that's what we typically seen throughout the pandemic. And in this case, there isn't that. So it is safe to say that it is the presence of the Delta variant. I have done a comparison because I'm thinking this looked like deja vu, and we're about a week ahead, of course, than what we were about this time last year. And last time about this time, we were talking about what different mitigation strategies we can take to help us not get to a surge that November was. So we're on a similar trend.
Carrie Bloom is with Vernon Memorial. Carrie, what about, I know you're not with the county health department there, but as kind of the major healthcare provider in that area, what is the situation like at your hospital and clinic?
I would echo what was previously said. We are seeing an increase in both hospitalizations and people coming in for testing. We also are seeing an increase in the demand for the vaccine. So maybe a month ago, 2 months ago, we had very little demand. And now we are starting to see that pick back up, which I am happy about. The more we can do to get people in and vaccinated, the better. So we've changed our processes so that we can offer vaccine administration every single day in our clinics to help that. But we are seeing an increase in inpatient COVID volumes in our hospital.
Dr. Joseph Podoruka is with the Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. Dr. Podoruka, as you're seeing patients and as you're hearing the news from your colleagues and from your clinic, is in terms of the contagious nature of this variant, we've been hearing a lot about that, but are a lot of these cases turning into severe cases? Are a lot of these people being hospitalized at this point?
Yeah, so we're fortunate, at least in La Crosse County, I think among adults, we're above 70% fully vaccinated. And as the teenage population, eventually the less than 12 population gets the vaccine, that number will increase. Definitely, we're seeing cases among the vaccinated patients, but with minimal symptoms, very rare that they would be hospitalized. But predominantly, this is now a resurgence or a surge among the unvaccinated. Compared to the previous kind of surge in early fall, I would say these patients are more sick, requiring more medical care, diagnostics, sometimes transfer out if heart lung bypass machine might be needed. But we are more concerned about the availability of hospital capacity to our community and to our region. So as you may know, and it's been quoted and made a good point, just the burden of the COVID patients on the inpatient side alone have made it difficult for the regular citizen to get emergency care. So if you had a heart attack, Ezra, if we're at capacity, in this case, both Gunderson and Mayo right now are on critical care diversion in La Crosse, we'd have to transfuse somewhere else. And then where would that be? Could it be another state away where we've received patients from as far as South Dakota, North Minnesota? So hospitals are pressed. So we want to be able to find the fine balance between serving the community but also taking care of patients for regular medical issues. And really the most effective way forward is the vaccine. And, you know, we are troubled as healthcare providers and public health advocates that we have an abundance and a supply and a surplus. And we have the resources there. It's getting those middle movers, those that are maybe wanted more time for safety, efficacy, or understand if there's any risk to their children, teenager. We need to get them to the next phase. And I think that will be a route of proper education on the safety findings that have evolved over the last 9 months.
So you're talking about the vaccines and people that for one reason or another just haven't gotten them yet, but who are not necessarily anti-vaccination. They can be convinced eventually if they see enough data or if they get enough information. what's it going to take to get these? I mean, I know people who in this very week have told me, well, I would get it, except it's not FDA approved, or I would get it, but it's experimental, or whatever. How do you answer concerns like that, that although technically true, I mean, those statements are not untrue, but they're like, it seems like almost unfair oversimplifications. How do you overcome people that have those ideas in their mind?
Yeah, so you have to take a unique approach. So you definitely can't be critical. You have to have an open mind and you have to get curious. So one method that seems to be effective is really asking them where they are, what their stance is with the vaccine, yes or no. Then ask them, you know, what are the some positives that may come of this? Well, you know, I don't have to wear a mask at school, or, well, I don't have to be worried about this social gathering, getting my grandmother or my relatives sick if we were to transmit something. Negatives, well, I don't know about the you know, the safety data, the safety profile. So you get the pros and cons, and then you go to the next step, you know, would it be okay? So ask permission, would it be okay for us to talk a little bit about what those concerns are? And if they're willing to do that, maybe you can make some middle ground. But you got to build that relationship as a provider or nurse or health advocate to that patient, that family, that parent, to get there. People are smart and there's a lot of misinformation out there, but some people in the middle of the road are really well-educated. They really want to look at the science. They have worries and concerns and anxieties that are legitimate about the vaccines, but that's where we can meet them in the middle and provide education ahead.
We're about to take a break for just a moment, but before we do, I want to talk about testing availability and vaccine availability. And I know those are kind of two different things, but let's start with La Crosse County. Paula, where is testing? Where can people find availability of testing or vaccination in La Crosse County?
Well, testing through the end of August, we have a testing site. The Wisconsin National Guard is doing what we term wing testing sites. There is one that's located at the Health and Human Service Building, which is 300 4th Street North, La Crosse, right north of the downtown post office or the city post office in La Crosse. That goes from 11 until 5 on Mondays. Beyond that, healthcare has testing available. Mayo Clinic Health System and Gunderson Health System have testing. We've been advised that people need to call ahead for that testing. Walgreens, as a pharmacy, also provides testing. I was on their website the other day, and they also encourage people to call or make an appointment for testing. And then we're continuing to look at what we can do in our community once the National Guard testing ends the end of August. I think the official end date is September 2nd, so virtually the end of August. So we're looking at what we can do, because we know free testing and testing without an appointment is an accessibility issue and an accessibility need. The Walgreens website said testing for ages 3 and over and is still available free. And then vaccination locations, again, both our healthcare partners are doing a fabulous job at making vaccinations available. And also the health department has some vaccination availability Tuesday, Thursdays, walk-in or appointment. And then also from on Wednesday evenings at the La Crosse Public Library downtown. So that the vaccination is also free.
What about Melanie Taji, Winona County Public Health? If somebody in the Winona County area is interested in learning more about testing or vaccination.
Yeah, so we have a variety of opportunities here in Winona County as well. I'll start off with testing. So testing is available at Winona Health, also at Gunderson Health System, their Winona campus, Olmsted Medical Center, and then Walgreens and Hy-Vee. We also have a semi-permanent testing site located in the city of Winona, located at our Winona Mall, which is open from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Monday through Thursdays, and Sundays 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Again, the testing at that community testing site is free. As for vaccinations, August is Immunization Awareness Month. So Winona County Public Health is having a variety of different vaccination options. Every Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday this month, you can visit us at our Winona County Public Health site at the Winona Health Parkview Building. The address is 825 Mankato Ave here in Winona, Minnesota. Walk-ins and appointments are available. If you'd like to schedule an appointment, you can call 507-457-6375. But we're also having pop-up clinics at Goodview Days, which is this Sunday from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. And at the City of Winona Farmers Market, Gladiola Days. And then the state of Minnesota has a vaccine finder and a testing finder website that individuals can look to see where else across the state of Minnesota that they can seek out testing or vaccinations. And then Winona Health and Walgreens and Hy-Vee also provides vaccinations as well.
Thank you very much. Carrie, Vernon Memorial, what opportunities do people have for either testing or vaccination through Vernon Memorial, or if you're aware of other sites in the Vernon County area as well?
Sure. So I know for the county, I'm not as aware of every opportunity, but I know on August 24th, there is a public testing being held through the National Guard. And in terms of testing at our organization, that can be done by contacting your primary care provider, calling and making an appointment, similar to, as others have said, make an appointment, come in and get your testing completed. For vaccines, the health department in Vernon County offers clinics, vaccine clinics on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and there's an online sign up that's available for that. And then through the clinic here, there is vaccine available every day. There is limited supply in terms of what we offer every day, but it is available every day. You can call and make an appointment and get in to get your vaccine with your primary care provider. We also are hoping to catch people, kind of going back to that, the people who are middle ground and just need a little bit more conversation about the benefits of the vaccine. Those vaccines are available in the clinic. So the physicians have the opportunity, the physicians and the nurses, to talk to patients while they're there in the clinic, perhaps for a different type of appointment. And if they can be persuaded to get the vaccine right there, we do kind of just-in-time vaccine, and we'll administer that at that time.
That's Carrie Bloom from Vernon Memorial. We're also speaking today to Paula Silla from La Crosse County Health Department, Melanie Taji from Winona County Public Health Department, and Dr. Joseph Podoruka from Mayo Clinic Health System. Our program is going to continue in just a moment. If you've missed part of our conversation today and would like to hear it again, or if you'd like to find a previous episode, you can look them all up on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. If you have a comment about this show or any of the others, I'd love to hear from you. Our email address is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Program continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall, and I'm joined today by Melanie Taji from Winona County, Minnesota, Carrie Bloom from Vernon Memorial in Viroqua, Wisconsin, from Dr. Joseph Podoruka from Mayo Clinic Health System. Paula Silla is with us, who's with La Crosse County Health Department. We're talking about COVID-19 and an interesting availability. I want to get Melanie back on here because Minnesota is doing an interesting thing to try to encourage people to get vaccinated. And you know, if nothing else works, give motivate people with what really motivates them. And in these times, that's a little bit of financial incentive.
Yeah, so you are absolutely correct. And so what Minnesota is doing is from now until August 22nd, any Minnesotan in ages 12 and up who receives a first dose of any COVID-19 vaccine can go online to the Minnesota Department of Health and read show proof and evidence of their first dose of the vaccine and receive a $100 Visa gift card. So this is good until August 22nd. And I would encourage any Minnesotan who has received their first dose of the vaccine recently to check out that website.
Do you know how effective that campaign has been? I suppose they'll have, when it's over, they'll know all of the total numbers. But anecdotally, do you have any impression on how that's working?
From what I'm hearing, it is working. Our vaccination numbers are up, and it works so much so because originally it was supposed to end on August 15th, and they extended it to August 22nd.
I want to talk about some treatment options that people bring up. I've seen a couple of my friends posting. One of my friends she's been begging people to get vaccinated and to take proper precautions and everything. And lately she raised the issue of encouraging people if they haven't been vaccinated, if they're resistant to that side of things, if they get COVID, at least talk to their doctor about something called monoclonal antibody treatment. And that seems to have come from a fairly legitimate source. On the other hand, I hear some people posting about folks that are taking primarily veterinary medication called ivermectin, which is used to treat mange in dogs and cats as some sort of weird COVID preventive. Dr. Podoruka, let's talk about each of those options. One seems, from my layman's eye, to come from at least legitimate sources, and the other one seems just nuts.
Yeah, I think these are curious questions, and you know, people are always seeking alternatives. We would hope they'd look to science and modern medicine, which is saying the COVID vaccine is the most effective way to battle this, including the Delta variant. But for this ivermectin medication, again, this is a anti-parasitic medication used, of course, in pets, and we do use it in the third world primarily to treat and, you know, intestinal worms and the like. But when you look at the mechanism of action and how this medication might work, there is some possibility that it could work on the bench level in the laboratory. But if you were to try to get the doses that this medication would require to be having any efficaciousness, it would be 100 times what the human body can handle. So toxic, so dangerous. So what studies have been done right now are in small cohorts. They're not randomized. They're not controlled. They're not showing any benefits or really no worsening. But the danger that comes with that, and again, the recommendation is not to use this medication, to be clear, but the danger that we're seeing is people coming in with toxicity of their livers, some needing liver transplants, end organ damage, kidney, heart. So, you know, that's where, you know, misinformation and not really vetting the science behind the pharmacology in these medications can be really dangerous to the public. So to be clear, this is not a medication that's recommended. Clinical trials are underway to understand it better. But like some of those other medications that were touted early on, like hydroxychloroquine, which we know had some heart toxicity issues and the like, this is not the recommendation. As far as those monoclonal antibodies, we know with the Delta variant, they are less effective. So that's that antibody IV infusion that you were, if you were at risk and met some criteria, maybe you would be a candidate to get if you came down with COVID for the goal of preventing hospitalization and burden of your COVID care, but is less effective for the Delta variant. So really that's just sort of a middle ground for what the vaccine actually does within your body. So this is cutting edge technology. The science is there. We have the safety data now, including a recent study looking at heart inflammation. So heart inflammation being one of the concerns in young adolescents and young adults, finding that extremely rare, 4 cases in a million, you know, minimal symptoms, easily treated with some over-the-counter medications, rarely needing to be hospitalized. In fact, the burden of having COVID itself on the heart is precipitously higher in the 1-2% range overall compared to, you know, 100,000ths of a percent risk with the vaccine. So we want to be curious, and we know people, you know, read things and they want to be educated, but the science is telling us some of these things are just they don't help, and in some many cases they can be dangerous.
Paula, we were talking a little bit in between segments, and you were talking about how some of the misunderstanding that people have about the safety of the vaccine that's out right now just has to do with their understanding of abbreviations, they see a term like EUA, which stands for Emergency Use Authorization, and they assume that the E means experimental.
Correct. So I think that we as public health and healthcare professionals need to continue to explain to people what this means. And emergency use authorization means that the science and the studies have been done on the safety of the vaccine. It just hasn't had time yet to get through the final approval, which is the FDA approval that we're waiting for. And so I think if you stop and think, EUA is emergency use authorization. There's no experimental here at all. Are there adverse effects? There can be, but as Dr. Paderewka said, they're very minimal. But if people do have questions, concerns, I think asking those questions of your healthcare provider to get the full information is what needs to be done. If I can share one other thing, I liken the vaccine is the most important thing that you can do to survive COVID. I would liken that to wearing your seatbelt in a car crash. Seatbelts will. That's the most important thing you can do to avoid injury in a car crash. Are some car crashes unsurvivable? Yeah, but if you have your seatbelt on, it's the most important thing you can do to survive a car crash. The most important thing you can do to survive COVID or to survive this pandemic and go on post-pandemic life is to get your vaccination.
So, Carrie Bloom from Vernon Memorial, I'm interested in your perspective as a hospital administrator and as someone who sees people coming and going, cases rising right now, falling earlier in the year. The public is starting to get a lot more comfortable being out and about. You're seeing a lot of people going to events, not just eating in restaurants, but going back to the movies, going obviously back to school, sporting events. There are festivals, indoors and outdoor concerts going on. What concerns do you have as a hospital administrator about the public engaging, and how do you translate that among your staff into encouraging the public to sort of moderate their behavior?
Oh, that is a great question. I think just like everyone, the entire society has mask fatigue, and there was this great little window of hope as things started opening back up and masks came off. We also, following CDC guidelines here at Vernon Health, we lightened up on some of the restrictions around masking just very briefly. It was only about a week when Delta started rearing its head and we went back to completely masking and all of our social distancing and all of those things following CDC guidelines. I think what will be hard is that people did see that window of hope and taking off. And just as we talked about earlier with things opening back up, festivals going back on, personally, I almost feel like it's going to be harder this time around than it was the first time around a year and a half ago, because people are so fatigued. Our team members here at work are very fatigued, obviously, and everyone is stretched so thin. I'm sure not just here, but in all organizations and not just in healthcare, of making sure we have the right staffing to provide the care. And it just will take due diligence and reminders of the importance of keeping those things in check as we move forward to keep our patients healthy, to keep our society healthy, to keep our workers healthy.
Melanie Taji from Winona County Public Health. In terms of your wish list, I guess, for people attending events outside and in public, outside their home, that is, and in public spaces, indoors and outdoors, what's the best advice? It you could say stay home. I don't get the impression that very many people are going to listen to that guidance at this point.
You're correct. Like with anything we do in life, there's a level of risk that one takes when participating in that activity. The same can be said when participating in activities during a pandemic. So I guess my wish is that prior to participating in these different activities, is they realize what actions that they can take to help reduce their risk, reduce the risk of spreading the virus to others. So the first is stay home. If you have any signs or symptoms, do not participate in that event. Stay at home, reduce your interaction with friends, family, and you're doing that for yourself, but you're also doing it for the protection of your loved ones. Wear a face covering if you can't social distance. If CDC is recommending indoors, regardless of your vaccination status, and if you're going to be in crowded situations, and then maybe ask yourself, do I need to be in that crowded situation? And then you have your own personal choice to, again, assess what risk that is to you. Practice the hand hygiene. Seek out testing if you do have symptoms. And then go from there. So those are our personal things that we can do. There are shared things that we can do as a society that can offer to provide protection to all. And that, again, includes receiving the vaccine, rolling up your sleeves, getting both doses of vaccines, because that's what we've seen to be the most effective. Wearing that face covering, seeking out that testing, adhering to quarantine and isolation. So those are all things that I would recommend. I know it's a long list. I ask a lot, but just questions to ask yourself before you engage in any activity.
Paula, as won't be any secret for people in our modern world, we're all connecting via Zoom. And you put some information in the chat earlier regarding vaccine location information. Why don't you go ahead and share that out for us?
Certainly.
I didn't have time to read it before the break.
No issues, no problem. So 211 is a hotline that you can call. They have information and can help people locate vaccination locations. There's also a website, vaccinefinder.org, that has vaccination location by zip code. And so when I put it in just to see where the closest Walgreens was the other day, it pulled up all the vaccination locations that were close to my zip code. The other perspective, if I may share, and then others can reflect on this, is the last pandemic that we had in the world was from 1918 to 1920. That was a two-year period. And I think that we'll know better March of 2022 how this COVID pandemic is going to play out. I don't know that it's going to be over. I think COVID will be around in some shape or form, is kind of what I've been hearing and what I've been reading. But just perspective here, we are way ahead of where we were last year this time. We know a lot, and vaccines are available. And that, I think, is kind of the nail on the coffin of this pandemic, if I can use that. I'm kind of getting ready for Halloween, I guess, in that term. That's the thing that can turn the corner if we can encourage people to ask questions if they have them, and seek out vaccination if they're eligible. The younger kids won't be eligible for a while yet. We're hearing later, maybe this year, but we're getting there, people. We all have pandemic fatigue, but we're getting there.
A hopeful message from Paula. Dr. Podoruka, what about you? Do you see the signs of hope, and what does the public need to know in terms of getting over this present hurdle?
I think the public needs to be cognizant that this is a dynamic process where COVID is going, the ups and downs. The messaging from science and the CDC and providers is also dynamic. So, for example, we know that the vaccine is now going to be offered as a booster for those with immunosuppressed, but there may be some messaging just announced today that the federal administration is going to be offering a booster to everyone that has had the two series mRNA vaccine. So obviously that's going to cause a little bit of confusion, you know, amongst those who are trying to understand, wait, we need a third one. But I think the reason for this, and again, it goes back to that we continue to learn. And in this case, with the Delta variant, In particular, we're seeing waning of that immunologic protection 6 to 8 months out. So where it was 90% plus, studies out of Mayo Clinic, studies out of Israel are showing that can be down as far as 60%. So if we see a booster in the near future, that is where we might end up. But as far as the long game, you know, I really hope that we can increase our vaccination numbers, take community stewardship and responsibility. We don't want vaccine escape to happen. And while we're already having vaccine breakthrough with the Delta variant with those vaccinated, vaccine escape would be a mutation that totally bypasses the vaccine. And that would be a very dangerous situation. There's some double variants out there that are making people a little worried. But if we can really push the vaccines ahead, community stewardship, maintain some of these social distancing mechanisms that have been somewhat of a challenge in different states, Wisconsin, Minnesota, you know, the limitations of government powers and really empowering local communities make decision, we may have some hope. But it's very likely that this virus will stick around with us for another couple of years, but we shall see how it ends up.
That's Joseph Podruka with Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. I'd like to thank my other guests as well. Paula Silla, the Health Education Manager with La Crosse County Health Department. Carrie Bloom, the Vice President of Vernon Memorial Healthcare in Viroqua. And Melanie Taji, the Winona County Public Health Supervisor. Thank you all for being with us today on Newsmakers. If you would like to hear our program again, you can find it on our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Stay tuned. We've got musicians on deck, and we're going to be talking all about the Great River Folk Festival coming up. That's next on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios on the campus of University of Wisconsin La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today and turning the page to some good outdoor fun coming up next weekend. The Great River Folk Fest. The Great River Folk Festival is hitting La Crosse on the 27th through the 29th. That's Friday through Sunday. And joining us to talk about it are the festival's director, David Shipper, and two musicians who will be featured, Danny Schmidt and Carrie Elkin. First of all, David, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And joining us via Zoom from their home are Danny and Carrie. Thank you all very much for being here as well.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
David, let's talk about the festival and get some of those details in people's minds. It starts next Friday, August 27th. What do people know who are going to be coming to Riverside to the festival?
Well, it's a 3-day event, and we kick it off on Friday night with a concert with three different performers, Humbird, Gentlemen's Anti-Temperance League, and Barbaro. And then we move into the arts and craft. And what I like to say, the really sexy part of a festival, the Round Robin Song Swaps, that's during the day on Saturday. And that is a really fun, relaxed kind of an experience. And you find musicians swapping songs and interacting with each other in different workshops. It's kind of fun. And then we close the night with a concert on Saturday with four different artists. We started off with Greg Gilbertson from Chippewa Falls. Then it's Danny and Carrie from Austin. And then we have Chicago Farmer from Illinois and Annie Mack from the Twin Cities.
You somewhat answered my next question, David. I was Danny Schmidt and Carrie Elkin are each musicians in their own right, each with their own career and history and songwriting and singing and websites and all that sort of thing. And yet here you are together, you're married. I'm assuming you perform in the same context as each other pretty often. Do you sing together more often than you then you don't, or how does that work?
When we're together, we sing together quite a lot. We met at a festival years ago now, and oftentimes we're touring individually, solo from one, especially now that we have a four-year-old daughter. One of us will go out at a time, but when it works out, when we can all travel together, we'll song swap and sing harmonies with each other.
Yeah. It's going to be fun to be on a festival stage together, song swapping.
We've missed it.
Yeah, we have missed it a lot.
I was going to ask about that. Is this your first time out since, I don't want to say, you know, COVID is still here with us, as anybody who was listening earlier in the show knows very well. But since sort of the shutdown portion of COVID, is this one of your first gigs out?
This is the first tour out. So we are actually in the Midwest right now. We're in Minnesota. We have a festival next weekend in northern Minnesota, or this coming weekend. And then we are in La Crosse for Great Rivers Folk Fest. We played one show last weekend and it felt strange and exciting. I think I cried probably 20 times on stage. I was so happy to be playing in front of people again. It was and people were so excited to be coming out to hear live music in a safe place. You know, all the stuff we're doing is outside. I think that people have a different appreciation and connection in both directions, as artists and as audience members. So we feel really fortunate.
Danny, as a musician, having come through the last year and a half or more, we hear a lot about the struggle of musicians and struggling to make a living, struggling to get back on the road, knowing when it's safe to ask your audiences to show up for things. But just as from an artistic point of view, talk about your relationship to the music. Has that changed, spending so much time off the road?
For me, the part of this whole job, there's a lot of different facets to the musician job, and my favorite part has always been the writing part of it. And so time at home, away from the road and away from crowds and away from performances and stuff, suited me. I miss the other parts too, you know. There's some people that for whom being up in front of people and sharing their music and feeling the energy flow back and forth between each other is really what fuels them. And for me, having some time to write fuels me.
Do you guys write together, or is it kind of each person to their corners?
Pretty much each person to their corners. We'll bring stuff out when we feel it's safely towards complete, and bounce things off each other. Or if we get stuck,
safely. We'll bounce off the
other. Yeah.
It's more like a workshopping an almost complete song, I would say.
Okay. David, talking about the festival, it's outdoors. We know that. What's it like putting together a festival, and what have you had to bear in mind as you think about bringing an audience together while our community is still faced with the reality of a pandemic?
Well, that's a good question there, Ezra. You know, one of the things that we did was immediately get in touch with the county. That was a requirement for La Crosse, and we put together a proposal how we would do it. And then really life got interesting because we all got vaccinated and some of the rules changed. But meanwhile, we have contact tracing. It's going to be a core to our mission. Nobody's going to come into the festival without being documented who they are in case something happens. And then we're going to promote the fact that even though you might not want to, we're going to offer you a vaccination sticker. So you can be next to somebody and know that the person you're standing next to has been vaccinated. We're not going to require, like some festivals are, because we're outside. There's no inside places where we would have to require masks. We will offer masks. We'll have masks available free. Some unique sports one from our Wingcraft, our sponsor that I work for, where they're going to be handing them out in case anybody wants it. And we're going to be very cognizant of making sure things are clean. The green room is not a green room this year. It's a tent, you know, so I could keep that clean and not have to deal with a camper that we would have to deal with. So we've made some changes. We don't have crafts for kids. We don't have hands-on demos with the crafts. And The kid entertainment is going to be fantastic, but kids will be sitting separately and, you know, they'll be doing social distancing. And we're actually asking people to bring their own chair if they'd like, just to make it easier to social distance. So it is a different fest. It's our first fest that we're back with. But as we've been watching some of our neighbor festivals, we think we've got a good hand on it.
What about tickets?
Tickets. We have tickets online. You can get a deal on it right now if you're buying an all events. But our traditional ticket base has been walk up. So you can walk up to the festival at any time and get a day pass, or buy a weekend pass, or buy just a Saturday and Sunday pass, kind of a la carte at the gate. And we're going to be nice like that. Again, we're just going to document who's buying it from a contact tracing standpoint.
And what about the cost of one of those tickets?
Well, the day pass right now, or the weekend pass right now, is $45 online. It saves you about $15 a piece. And then after that, it's $10 daytime pass and a $20 evening concert pass.
Okay. So, and what's the website if somebody wants to take advantage of the online purchase?
GreatRiverFolkFest.org.
GreatRiverFolkFest.org. You mentioned a couple of the artists that are going to play. What can people expect to hear when they show up at the festival?
Well, you know, this year we did our songwriting contest online this year submissions versus with videos. So when we looked at our daytime passes or daytime selection, we ended up with 30 different artists that we booked throughout the entire 3 days. So this year, what I'd be expecting if I was a normal Great River Folk Fest audience member, I'd expect more variety than you've ever seen in your life from us. High quality singer-songwriters. We have string bands from Barbaro and Kickaboo Joy Juice. And we have blues from Jake Labatz, who I'm intrigued to meet on Sunday. Steve Buscemi from Fargo has given Jake Labatz a huge recommendation. So I don't know if you get any better than Steve Buscemi from Fargo.
Well, I guess he would know. I don't know. So when people think about folk music, they obviously, you know, they think about the folk movement, you know, back in the day, and Peter, Paul, and Mary, and all that kind of stuff. The music has evolved and broadened and expanded, and includes quite a variety of musical styles. What do you have in store for people in terms of that? I know you mentioned you have some blues, you have string bands. What else can we hear?
Well, I think when you get into the old traditional, we probably have the least amount of people who are going to sing a song from the 1300s or 1400s or even the 1800s. We mostly have people who are writing and creating their own music. And it's unique, and it's heartfelt, and it's funny, and it's something that you might cry over, and the next song you'll be laughing at it. So I'm really looking forward to it. I love these performers that we have, and I love the fact that you're going to go from one kind of song to another. The workshops, the other thing that we have, which is pretty unique to this year, and Danny is part of that connection. We have a connection to the Kerrville Folk Festival down in Texas, where Danny, Shanna and Address, Humbird, and John Smith all were Kerrville New Folk artists. Over the last, I think they've been doing that for a good 30 to 40 years. This is the first time we've had four different people who won that award. Shanna and Address, who closes the night on Sunday, she is a hoot. Yeah, and she writes some funny songs and some really sad songs. She right now is biking across America in a bike thing. She'll take a pause and fly into La Crosse. Then I don't know. I have no idea where she's going to go after that.
You know, we got a lot of bike trails around here.
Yeah, But I think where she was stopping, she couldn't quickly bike up to us. So she's going to fly into La Crosse.
Well, it sounds like a fun time, and I can't wait to see everything that's going on there. David Shipper is the director of the Great River Folk Festival. Danny Schmidt and Carrie Elkin both playing at the festival this year. David, thank you very much for being here.
No problem.
Danny and Carrie, thank you so much.
That's our pleasure. Thank you for having us. We look forward to seeing you.
That's right. Great River Folk Festival is Friday, August 27th through Sunday, August 29th. And will take place in downtown La Crosse at Riverside Park. If you'd like to hear more information about this, a previous interview, a previous show, more information about our show, it's all available at wpr.org/newsmakers. There are two opportunities to hear our show on the air each week. We originate Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. We repeat Friday evenings at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. And, of course, we're always available online at wpr.org/newsmakers. My producer's Dawn Jewell. I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us again next week for another Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.